I have a question for you today. It's about expectations. Have any of you ever been let down? You've had expectations for maybe a friend, a loved one, a class, situation growing up, that you had these great expectations and the situation didn't actually amount to what you wanted it to. Well, this is got a little story here. When I was first married in 2013, in the spring around tax time, I was doing my taxes on TurboTax, and my computer is a little bit slow. It's a little netbook laptop. And in the course of me doing the taxes, my screen happened to break. I got a little upset, so my screen broke. And so I ordered a new computer. It was a little refurbished one. I saw it for $50 online. And so I said, hey, you know, better than getting a new screen, I'll just get a whole new computer. It's $50. And back then I had a lot more money. So $50, I mean, if it works, it works. If it doesn't, then I didn't waste any money. I waited about 3 weeks, got a notice, because I had a P.O. box. I had to go to the post office to pick up my package. And I got there and the postman handed me a package about this big. And I was like, this is the package you sent for me to get? Yeah. Okay. So I signed it and left, and I got in the car, and I opened it up. It was a coin. I don't know what happened. It was a Morgan City silver dollar. Woo. Either Morgan City or Carson City, one of those two. I was like, what on earth? And I don't realize when I ordered it, when I clicked on it, it actually took me to a second website that looked like the website I was on, and I ordered it through that. I had no idea. It was out of China. I didn't know how to get it back. So I was like, oh, whatever. So I threw it in my drawer, just forgot about it. I just bought a new screen for my computer. And it was while we were here, maybe our first year, we needed money for something. We were going to North Carolina to visit Katie's grandparents. We had no money to go down there. It's like, hey, I'll check out this coin, see if it's worth anything. $250. I found some guy on Craigslist that, he probably ripped me off a little bit, but I told him the story, and he believed me, and he's like, I'll give you $250 for it. I was like, sure. So we used that money to go down to visit Katie's grandparents and have fun down there. That was not exactly what I expected when I opened that package, expecting it to be a computer, and I got a little coin that in the long run worked out to be a lot more valuable than the computer I ordered. So it was an interesting scenario there with my expectations. Something happened differently than what I wanted it to, but in the long run it worked out very well. I'm speaking from John 11 and 12, kind of just spotting through a little bit. Hear about our expectations for God. We all have expectations. We might not even realize the expectations we put on him. So I'll speak on that a little today. Starting in verse 11, a man named Lazarus was sick, and he was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. This Mary, whose brother Lazarus now lay sick, was the same one who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. So the sister sent word to Jesus, saying, Lord, the one you love is sick. When he heard this, Jesus said, this sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that the Son of Man may be glorified through it. So he stayed there for about another 2 days. He got word that Lazarus is sick. He's all right, well, he's not going to die, so it's not a huge deal. I'm just going to take my time where I'm at. And then Jesus tells his disciples, let us go back to Judea. Now in chapter 10, he just left that area because they threatened to kill him by stoning him. So he said, let's go back to Judea. And they said, they just wanted to stone you. Why do you want to go back? He said, well, Lazarus has fallen asleep, and I want to go and wake him up. Well, if he's sleeping, can he just get up by himself? He's dead, okay? He's dead. That's why we have to go there. We got some business to take care of. So he's going to Bethany. And by the time he gets there, it had been 4 days. Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem. A lot of the Jews from Jerusalem came out to comfort Mary and Martha with the death of their brother. And Mary said, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." And they have this little conversation about her believing that he's the Messiah and that Lazarus will one day rise from the grave. And Jesus explaining that, "No, I can actually do it right now." Then in verse 32, then Mary came out where Jesus was. And she fell at his feet and said, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." They said, "We believe that you're the Messiah and that you can heal. That is exactly why we sent the messenger to go tell you that Lazarus was sick, because we needed him to be healed. We expected you to come and heal him because you're the Messiah. That's what you do. And then you show up here 4 days late." See, they expected Jesus to work on their timetable. And he said, "Hang on a second. Just hang on a second. I got something in store here. Might be pretty cool if you watch. My brother wouldn't have died." Moving on. Jesus was deeply moved, all that stuff. He comes to the tomb. And he says, "All right," they expected him to come to the tomb just to see where he's buried. "All right, you saw where he's buried. Now let's go." He says, "No, let's move the stone. I don't know if you heard what we just said a minute ago, but he's been dead for 4 days. Like, dead for 4 days. There's no question. Even if he was alive and we put him in the tomb, he is definitely dead now." On top of that, it's going to smell. You know what we just went through? We were waiting for you to come to heal him, and you were late, and he died. He's been in there 4 days. We do not want the memory of smelling my brother rotting dead for 4 days. He said, "Well, just move the stone." And he said, "Lazarus, come out." We know the story. He came out, wrapped in his mummy garb and all that stuff. "Take the grave clothes off and let him go." So they didn't just expect Jesus to work on their timetable. They expected Jesus to work, do his work their way. They said, "He's dead. Do you understand that he's dead?" "Yeah, but you said you believe that I'm the resurrection and the life. You know, I can raise him from the dead." "Yeah, but he's dead. No one comes back from the dead. He's dead." And Jesus says, "Well, I'm a little bigger than that. I do my work my way." And news of this spread all over the place. Passover was coming up in Jerusalem, so Jews from all over were coming to Jerusalem for a ceremonial cleansing before the Passover and a feast. And they kept looking for Jesus. They heard about what happened in Bethany. This guy was raised from the dead. There's a lot we've heard about this Messiah, that he would heal people and raise people from the dead. We got to meet him. I wonder if he's going to be there, because if he's the Messiah, then he's someone I need to get close with. So they're asking, "Is he coming to the feast? What do you think? Is he coming at all?" And he finally ended up coming to the feast. The next day, there was a great crowd that had come to the feast and heard that Jesus was on his way to Jerusalem. I couldn't imagine the excitement that was building after what happened in this little small town, Bethany, of this man being raised from the dead. And then those people going to Jerusalem for the Passover meal and the cleansing. And I mean, there's no way you can keep quiet about someone being raised from the dead. There's no way you're going to keep that a secret. So that would have spread all over in Jerusalem. So they're waiting for this one guy, Jesus, to show up. We want to see him. We want to see who he is, what he's going to do. Could he be this Messiah we've been waiting for so long? We haven't seen any great movement like this in a long time, especially someone raised from the dead. And they knew the scriptures. They knew the prophecies of the Messiah. They knew what the law said about him. And it's looking pretty much like Jesus is the one. So I could not imagine this excitement, this building. And then they heard he's on his way. So he's coming down into Jerusalem, and people are getting excited, and they're grabbing palm branches and stuff, because they're gonna like hail him as king basically as he's coming into Jerusalem. Then they see. Well, first we'll read. They took palm branches and went out to meet him, shouting, "Hosanna! Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Blessed is the King of Israel." Jesus found a donkey and sat on it, as it is written, "Do not be afraid, O daughter of Zion. See, your king is coming, seated on a donkey's colt." Now, not only have they heard about the miracles he's done, raising the guy from the dead, now they say, is that him riding in here on a donkey? Remember what that prophecy says about the Messiah? He'd come in riding on a donkey's colt. This is the man. They had high expectations for Jesus. He's the Messiah, the one descended from David that's going to come and restore the kingdom of Israel, get rid of the Roman oppressors, and establish their own kingdom again. So they're saying, save us, King of Israel. And Jesus comes through Israel, goes through all that wonderful procession as they're praising him as king. And he kind of goes up and out doing his own thing, hanging out with his disciples. Now the crowd that was with him when, verse 17, now the crowd that was with him when he called Lazarus from the tomb and raised him from the dead continued to spread the word. And many people, because they heard that he had given this miraculous sign, went out to meet him. So finally he's in Jerusalem. We'd heard for days about this guy that might be the Messiah. Now we're almost absolutely certain he's the Messiah. I'm going to go talk to him. So they came up to the disciples. They said, "We want to see Jesus. We want to talk to him. We got some questions for him. What is he going to do? We got some high expectations for him. What is he going to do for us?" And then Jesus has this little dialogue that kind of doesn't make any sense to anybody at the time being there. But at the end, he goes on to say in verse 32, "But I, when I am lifted up from the earth, will draw all men to myself." So they're asking him these questions, and he knows what they're getting at. He knows what they're wondering. He says, "I'm going to die. The Son of Man's going to be lifted up on a cross." Then the crowd spoke and said, "We have heard from the law that the Christ will remain forever. So how can you say the Son of Man must be lifted up?" Who's the Son of Man? If you're the Messiah, who's the guy that's going to die? Who's the Son of Man? He said, "Well, me. I'm the one that's going to die. I'm the one that's going to be lifted up." And then we hear only a couple days later that they went and nailed him to that cross. The same people that hailed him as the Messiah coming in chapter 12, hailed him as the Messiah, saw him, heard of him raising this man from the dead. Some of them saw it. And then they went and killed him a couple days later. Interesting. See, they had a little certain expectations of Jesus. They expected Jesus to be who they wanted him to be. They wanted someone that was going to deliver them from their Roman oppressors. They wanted someone who was going to restore their cultural pride. They wanted someone who was going to be their king from their people to reign over them again. But Jesus said, "I'm sorry, but this is who I am. And this is who I'm going to be." And their hearts were hardened. They later killed him. So we see they expected Jesus to work on their own timetable, on their timetable. They said, we got something worked out. We think we know what's going to work the best. And you should work this way because it'll work with our plans that we already have. He's sick, and if you come and heal him now, he won't die. But you failed because he died because you were late. I wonder how many of us have expected Jesus to work on our timetable instead of his. I know I have. Me and President Ballard have had conversations over the last year about that. Expecting Jesus to work on your own timetable. Say, Jesus, you know, by the time I graduate, I want this, this, this. And if you don't do that, then you know, maybe I should consider some other plans. And he says, well, you can consider them, but if you follow them, you're kind of going to walk away from your will, my will for your life, and then I'm going to have to drag you back kicking and screaming to where I wanted you to be in the first place. So how about you just trust me for my timetable, because it's a better plan than yours. Just hang on a second. You might be in an area in your life right now where you just need to take a breath, pray and say, I just need to hang on a second, or an hour, a week, or a year, or 10 years. Just need to hang on. Just need to let Jesus move in his own time, because when he moves in his own time, you're way better than anything you could have planned. They expected Jesus to work in their way. Thinking of Pownall, where I am, I don't know how God's going to work in Pownall. I would like to see the whole fire department come to Christ and the rescue squad, and through that, all their families get saved, because that's my influence right now. That's what I'm praying for. But Jesus could just show up in some other way. I don't know how. He could just, some one person could get saved that doesn't even go to our church, their whole family gets saved, and then just a mass revival sweeps and just skips over any involvement with our church. I hope that doesn't happen. But I can't just expect Jesus to do his work my way, because my way is stupid. We think we have these wonderful plans. If you would just work my way, everything would be better. And he doesn't work that way, because no, if I worked your way, nothing would be better. In fact, it might probably be worse. And I have to come and bail you out because you made poor decisions. Don't expect Jesus to work your way. Let him work his way. And they expected Jesus to be who they wanted him to be. There's so much I could say about this. You might worship characteristics of Jesus that don't exist because you created them in your mind. I have done that before that, you know, I'm praying, I'm reading my Bible. Therefore, I expect you to do what I pray. I expect you to work how I want you to. I want you to be who I think you are. And every time he says, well, it's kind of hard to be who you think I am because I can only be who I am. It's not going to work out how you wanted it. So what are your expectations for God? Have you created them in your own mind? Are you impatient with your expectations for him? See, when I started following Christ when I was 16, probably more into 17, I started praying like once I discovered the Isaiah 6 passage, you know, God, I'm here, send me. I'm ready, I'll go. I'll go anywhere. Send me to the darkest places. And nothing changed. I pray that every day, nothing changed. Got opportunity to share the gospel with people at school, which I didn't see as like a huge thing. I'm like, I want to do something big. And I graduated from high school and I went to Word of Life and I said, God, here I am, send me to the darkest places. I'm ready, I'll go. And then I got married, moved back to Michigan, just kind of waiting. Worst thing ever. Waiting when I want to be going. I'm ready, send me, I'll go to the darkest places. Then finally, he said, well, there's this college in Vermont. It's called Northeastern Baptist College. Maybe you should look into it. Using Tim Goose to tell me that. not really interested. There's colleges in Michigan I can go to, really good ones. There's good pastor jobs, youth pastor jobs I can get here. What do I need to go to Vermont for? Then I heard Landon Warren in one of his little church planning videos explaining that Vermont is the least church and most spiritually dark, one of the most spiritually dark places in America. And I remembered all those times that I prayed, God sent me to the darkest places. And he brought me here, and it's been this time of kind of waiting for 3 years. Because I say, here I am, send me. He says, I will, but you're not ready. That's not what I want to hear. If you know me, which most of you know me pretty well, even just for a short conversation, I don't like to wait around. I don't like to waste time. I don't like to babysit people. I want to go. I want to go and I want to get work done. God said, that's great. I appreciate that about your personality. But if you go with that right now, you will destroy yourself. See, I wanted Jesus to work on my timetable, but he didn't. I expected Jesus to work my way, but he didn't. And I expected Jesus to be who I wanted him to be, but he wasn't. And I'm so thankful for that. So ask yourself the question today. What do you expect from your God? Lord, I thank you so much for the salvation we have through you, for the grace that you provide us, not just for forgiveness of sins, but strength for today. Lord, I pray that you would do far more exceedingly and abundantly in all our lives. The students here, that you would empower us with your spirit to go out to do what no one could ever do in our lifetime. I thank you for blessing us with this school, equipping us to have the mind of a scholar, the heart of a shepherd, and the perseverance of a soldier. Lord, help us to wait for your timetable, to wait and let you work, and to trust who you are, because that plan, that person, is more amazing and more powerful than we could ever comprehend. Lord, I pray that that would be encouraging for us as we go out, that would embolden us to do what we could never do. In your name, amen.